Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable. It's Tuesday in America. It is still America, right? We're still the United States of America.
Yes, it is, comrade.
Go us.
I heard thunder this morning. I didn't know if it was thunder or the Liberty Bell was cracking again. I wasn't sure exactly what happened. Well, good morning, everybody. It is Tuesday, and we've got a lot going on, and we have a lot to talk about, and we have a lot of wonderful people here to do just that. So we'll get right to it. We welcome your letters, of course. I am not a rocket scientist, but let me just predict there will be a lot of letters today. I predict there will be a lot of letters today. And if there are not, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? Why would you not engage at this moment? So, with that, let me introduce our panel to you. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Hey, Joe.
How are you?
Well, you know, my wife and dog have left me.
Oh, for good or just momentarily?
I'm going to see a Broadway play.
Oh, where'd they go and see? Do you know?
My Fair Lady.
Oh, My Fair Lady. Oh.
Because the lead is a local celebrity.
Lauren Ambrose.
Paris. That's right.
That's great. She's absolutely wonderful in that show. Okay. Mike Spain
is... did you see it already?
I have seen it. Well, it's been around for a while.
Wow.
Yeah.
Love the show.
Yeah. Mike Spain is here. He is the associate editor of the Times Union, joins us each and every Tuesday and yesterday. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Kaylin Brown is here. She is the head of the communications department at the College of St. Rose. She is also a journalism professor, and it's a pleasure always to have her in our company. Good morning.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Very nice to have you here. J.P. Miller is the man behind the Empire Report. He is the founder and proprietor, and we are thrilled that he is with us this morning. It is because of him that I got to see all of the front pages of all of the newspapers in New York of how they were covering the big story from yesterday.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Good to have you. Thank you very much. All right. So let us begin with where I don't imagine we're going to go too far afield from this subject today. For two reasons. One, it's just so enormous. And two, I don't really think I want to talk about anything else but this. This is just unbelievable, and so here we go. Yesterday, President Trump stood next to President Vladimir Putin of Russia and publicly challenged the conclusion of his own intelligence agencies that Moscow interfered in the 2016 presidential election. Wrapping up what he called a deeply productive summit meeting, Mr. Trump offered an extraordinary show of trust for a leader accused of attacking American democracy. Some Republicans have rebuked Trump for siding with Putin. Others remain silent. No Republican in Congress pledged any particular action to punish the president. We'll start there.
So treason is the word that I would use in this instance. I don't think that it's too I don't think that it's too tough of a word.
Made it sound like as if it were the word of the day, actually. The word of the day, ding, treason.
Well, is it right. The word of the day? I agree with the critics who have said that it was treasonous behavior.
And so Malcolm Nance told us on Friday that treason is an action, right? Treason is an act, and it has a very defined definition. And there are people who are employing that definition and comparing to what happened yesterday and saying that that definition fits within this particular context.
Yeah, I believe he defined it as of Friday, prior to what happened yesterday in Helsinki. I don't mean to speak for Malcolm, but I heard your great program, and he was saying what had happened up to that point didn't constitute the actual definition of giving aid and comfort to the enemy, but he thought it was treason-y or treasonish or something like
yes.
that. Yeah, and so the debate today is whether standing alongside the president of Russia and repudiating our own CIA, FBI, and the National Security Agencies and his own cabinet and many, many others siding with Putin and saying, I just don't know why they would hack the election, you know. And basically, is that giving aid and comfort to the enemy? I don't know if it legally rises to that, but it sure looks like collusion.
Well, you know, Thomas Friedman in the New York Times editorial today said there is overwhelming evidence that our president, for the first time in our history, is deliberately or through gross negligence or because of his own twisted personality engaged in treasonous behavior, behavior that violates his oath of office to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Well, look, let's remember who Vladimir Putin is. He drops bombs on hospitals. He kills, I think, 50,000 children in and around Syria. He's a guy who really has not has been, you know, basically an enemy of this country, and the fact that he is aided and abetted, leading me to the question, which I'm scratching my head on all morning, is what do they got on him? Because I just don't get it. I mean, I don't understand why, knowing that everybody who worked for him was opposed to this, his utterances, that he would do it, except that for some reason they have him by a body part.
Well, and that question was asked directly by a member of the press corps yesterday, of what do you have on the President of the United States? And President Putin chuckled, and President Trump said, well, if they had anything, it would be out by now.
Sure they would.
Which, by the way, kudos to the press and the questions they asked during the press conference yesterday, I thought.
They had no time to ask any questions. They were asked really allowed to ask three questions, and I thought that the reporters did a really good job. Well, the United States reporters, the Russian reporters were talking about the World Cup, but I thought the United States reporters did a great job, and I thought it was obviously a disgraceful performance on the part of the president.
And the reporters did exactly what they were supposed to do, and they didn't back down in the face of probably a very uncomfortable scenario. I mean, it appeared to be pretty uncomfortable, but they forged through and got the questions on the record and the pathetic answers on the record as well.
So, go ahead.
I was just going to say it. Then it raises the question. That was what we saw in public. Those were the comments that went on in public. What went on in the two
and we don't know.
Plus hours that they were in private with each other? What kinds of deals were brokered? What assurances were made? What was said?
And what record of it did Putin keep? Because I would not be surprised if some record was made by Putin, at least, of that meeting prior to the press conference.
That has been said, that often in those meetings, that the to make sure that the translation is correct, that the translator will keep a record.
And on both sides, right?
On both sides. There are members of the House and Senate, on both sides actually, who are calling for those notes, if there are notes, to be released so people have a better idea. I don't see that happening, but it is something that's being called for this morning.
And when they asked about, you know, what do you have on the president, I have to look back at Hillary Clinton's book, What Happened, right after the election, because she made a point in her chapter about Russia of noting that Putin couldn't ask for a better friend than Donald Trump, quote unquote, unquote. That's page 335. And she goes into pretty extensive detail about the paper trail that was left concerning the financial backing the Russians have given to the Trump family over the years.
And this is the point that she made during the debate, where she said that that he would be a puppet, that
exactly.
Donald Trump would be a puppet. So now you obviously that tape is being played this morning. So you have President Putin, who seized Crimea, invaded Ukraine, provided the missiles that shot down a civilian Malaysian airliner over Ukraine, bombed tens of thousands of refugees out of Syria into Europe, destabilized Europe, been involved in the death of a British woman who accidentally handled a Russian nerve agent deployed to kill ex-Russian agents in England, and deployed misinformation to help tip the vote in Britain toward exiting.
Did you mention Syria?
And fracturing the European Union. And we haven't even gotten to the interference in the United States election of 2016. So with that list, how does, when asked about a very pointed question about the about how you, whether you're going to believe your intelligence agents, the United States intelligence, or if you're going to believe the the dictator that you say, well, he's right here. I have him, which is a weird thing to say, but I have him. And he says that he didn't do it, and then looks in the camera and said, "But and why would he?"
Now, one of the things that's interesting is that I love just having that pregnant silence.
Well,
we just had, but we now know a little bit. I think we can suspect, but we now suspect that we know why those income taxes have not been shared with the American public, because one can only suspect that something was going on with his relationship, economic relationships and business relationships with the Russians.
Which is why when you look at Clinton's book again.
Wait, what page?
It's still on page 335. This chapter on Russia is amazing. And on 335, 10 years ago in 2008, Hillary Clinton wrote that Trump's son, Donald Jr., told investors in Moscow, quote, "Russians make a pretty disproportionate cross-section of a lot of our assets." This is out there. USA Today has covered it forever and ever. It's not just USA Today, of course. But the financial connections are established. The revelation of the taxes would certainly be valuable.
I have a legal question.
Yes.
If a special counsel is investigating possible involvement of the Russian government, do they have access to IRS records that might indicate a long-term relationship that might make one party vulnerable to the other, economic blackmail, et cetera?
You know, Mike, we've had a lot of questions about that. I've been thinking about it for a long time. We do know that an awful lot of people go to jail for income tax evasion. So somehow prosecutors are able to get that information as to what people's, you know, filings were about. It's hard to believe that Mueller doesn't have it now.
I agree. If they got Al Capone on tax evasion,
sure,
they certainly would have access to Donald Trump's tax records.
Why? So, I mean, I would just like everybody's thoughts on this before we go to a break. But why was it so? You mentioned the pregnant pause a moment ago, but why was it so breathtaking for everyone yesterday to watch that and just to see it? I mean, we ran it live here. I was waiting for sort of you still get this false sense of security that there's going to be just the regular political answer, and then all of a sudden it just goes, and you're like, oh my God.
I'm only doing this for Caitlin, but back on Fire Island, we used to have a game called Saluji, and it would be a guy in the middle, and then you'd throw it over his head, and that person would try to catch the ball that was going over their head. And as it got, the people on either side got closer and closer and closer. That's what's happening to Donald Trump. He's caught. They've got him, in my opinion, because it's the only thing that will explain.
They being who?
The Russians.
Well, but they know they have him, right? I mean, but
so okay, so then the
but
question
I'm different,
is,
then,
why, yeah,
your then
question
Mueller,
is,
then,
why does he show up? Yeah, but here's the question: why does he show up to do this thing? Why does he decry what all of his intelligence people have said? Why does he risk John McCain and, for God's sakes, the Senate leader and the House leader and everybody else coming after him? He has to. He's caught. He's the guy in the middle as they're throwing the ball over their head and getting closer and closer on both sides. On one side, you got Mueller. On the other side, you got the Russians handling the ball.
My interpretation of why he did it is he is a very paranoid guy, and he sees his intelligence community put out the information on the 12 Russians, you know, 3 or 4 days before his meeting, and he says these government people in the deep state are trying to get me. They're trying to make me look foolish, and I'm going to show them. And, you know, he is a masterful communicator. He had the opportunity to do a service to himself yesterday and be tougher on Putin and still not go as far as everybody would want him to go. But it was such a whiff. And it was like, you know, he's putting a 3-foot putt on the golf course, and he putt it 20 feet the other way. You know, it was bizarre, I think.
Godfather Part 2.
He appears beholden to Putin. That's obvious. To me, our president behaved like a lapdog. He lay down on the ground before Putin. That's what I saw.
Well, I think he did make us look weak. And it's important to remember that we are the largest economy in the world. We have the largest military in the world. We're the most prosperous country by many, many measures. And Russia is not that. And it's like when he stood next to Kim Jong-un, people said he put us at an equal with North Korea, which was ridiculous. But he doesn't have to. We have a position of power. We have a position of prominence over Russia. There had to be some reason that he would be subservient to Putin in public. It's almost like he got down on his knees and he kissed his feet. It's metaphorically, that's what happened yesterday, and it was painful and icky.
I agree, and his body language said the same too. Mm. As you see him do that, he was very slumped over, and Putin was brash with his chest out.
The body language of Putin too. That was really a lot of letters.
Well, and Putin pulling out the football, right, and handing it over and saying the ball's in your court. I mean, the orchestration of that.
By the way,
Kaylin, cheap
in America
theater.
We call it soccer. All right, we have a ton of letters. We're going to get to those. We're going to take a break and just let the dust settle for a second. We welcome your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Kaylin Brown, and J.P. Miller with us. We are going to get to your letters. We have a ton of them, so we're going to get right to them. We are, of course, talking about the Trump-Putin summit yesterday, and the President of the United States' questioning of U.S. intelligence on the 2016 election, and of course, the president said that the Russian leader was powerful in his denial of meddling. A lot was made about what the hell was he talking about, by the way, when he was talking about the servers. Does anybody understand where he was going off on the servers?
Well, he was Hillary.
He was just throwing back the what about Hillary and all her email servers.
And I want to know the servers and the servers and the servers and the servers.
Yeah, well, it's shorthand for let's get back to Hillary.
Yeah, they're worse than me. What about this? What about that? The whataboutism that, you know, doesn't matter what I'm guilty of. What about,
what about Winston Churchill?
Sacco and Vanzetti. What about them?
Right. He wants to talk about what happened 2 years ago, not what's happening now.
Well, what I think he said was also that he was in Brussels watching the Peter Stroke testimony.
Yes.
That when he was overseas, he was watching the House testimony by FBI agent Peter Stroke.
Sure.
All right. Let's go to letters.
All right, Joe. Thank you for that. Claude says, Putin must have something big on Trump. Who wrote Trump's possibly treasonous comments? Putin? Trump can't write more than a tweet. It is becoming more and more obvious that Putin has something big on Trump. And that is from Claude, who says that he's watching us. You can do that on our
WAMC.org.
You call that from Syracuse. That's right, from Syracuse. That's good. Bob writes, panel, at yesterday's press briefing, President Trump derided FBI agent Peter Strzok as a disgrace to the FBI and his country. I hope that Mr. Strzok is an Army veteran with 20 years plus in the FBI protecting America, wears Trump's insults as a badge of honor. To be hated by a despicable coward, serial sex abuser and tyrant in all but name is something to be proud of. I believe I'm speaking for tens of millions of his fellow Americans. When I say Mr. Strzok, thank you for your service. Bob from Albany. Did I mispronounce Strzok?
Stroke and Strzok.
I've heard
both. Yeah.
I agree with our listener.
Okay.
Wow, I'm so surprised. Chris said, regarding Helsinki, a lovely morning to you, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Madam Secretary of State had an unsecured computer server in her bathroom. Everyone has lost their emails. Putin knows where the bodies are buried. Pardon me. Light the torches. The Clinton crime syndicate and its shotgun-riding FBI are about to burn with compliments. Chris from Rosendale.
I'm not sure what that says.
No, me neither. And Frank says, treason definition. Treason is the only crime defined in the Constitution, includes giving aid and comfort to enemies.
Trump gave comfort to the enemy.
Well, he did.
He did it. And he's dismissing our investigations. It's important. I apologize.
And John says something I've been thinking about all morning. Do the P-tapes matter? P is spelled P-E-E. The P-tapes are the sensational part of the Steele dossier latched onto by the press. Could the Steele dossier contain far more compromat, all dull yet far more lethal, of a Trump and or his family? And Jack says, finally, high crimes. Yesterday, President Trump pushed impeachment, which I support, towards critical mass. Before the world's eyes, Trump sold us out. His failure to preserve, protect, and defend the U.S. while standing not just next to but with our adversary finally says it all. Everything about Trump has smelled from the start with his refusal to release his tax returns and revealed in full yesterday. Russia's grip on Trump carries the odors of money laundering and tax evasion. Soon we will know, then we must act. And that's Jack from Ghent. So that raises an interesting question, panel, does it not? I've been sitting up a good deal of the morning from very early, watching the Republicans traipse before the cameras and to talk about how they didn't agree with Trump on what he said or what he was doing. I didn't hear anybody say, and I'm a Republican congressman, for filing articles of impeachment.
No, they seem to be walking that line so far, with maybe a little bit of exception. John McCain, of course, was John McCain and said what he felt and was honest. But others, especially in the House where articles of impeachment would have to come, seem to be walking that fine line where they are unhappy with the way it went yesterday. They thought he would have taken a better advantage of the opportunity. And by the way, we believe that the FBI and the CIA were right about Russian meddling. Period.
But this
period. That's it. It stops there.
Now here's Captain Obvious speaking now, but this is really serious. I mean, this is deadly serious what has happened. And if you allow it to go on, how does this affect the elections in just a few months? How does it affect our place in the world? How does it affect our allies? And do we even have them anymore? I don't know. At what point do we not just take it as, there he goes again, versus, oh, my God, this is really, really going to have a detrimental effect to the country.
And I'd like to just add on to that. Let's say you're John Faso or a Republican congressman. What do you do in a situation like this? Especially if you come from a close district, for example, like Faso does. Do you bail out on the president? Do you say this is terrible and risk alienating Republicans who might sit on their hands and not come out and vote for you? What do you do? And my thinking about this all morning long is you try to straddle the line. But there's no easy way to do this.
So, political scientist, can I ask you a question?
Certainly, and I'm flattered.
It seems as though, when we don't have the polls on this yet, but so often we have polls that indicate that a majority of people, we saw this in immigration, a majority of the people say, yeah, we don't think you should be taking children away from their parents at the border. And yet you don't have Republicans speaking out because they're concerned about how it's going to affect them at the polls.
Correct.
Meanwhile, 80-90% of the people polled say they don't believe this should be done. I don't understand why there isn't more of an understanding that the people are outraged by what happened yesterday and that maybe by being brave and saying something that would win them more political points, not that that's the point, but more political points than shutting up would.
Joe, as a political scientist, I thank you for that. The two words that here are really telling are political salience, meaning how important is this to the person who is observing it? Yes, it's a terrible thing taking children away from their parents, and they don't like it, and they say so. We don't like that. If it was us, we wouldn't like it. But it doesn't rise to that point where they say this is so dangerous that it becomes much more meaningful to me.
So how does this not reach?
Oh, this is pretty high.
Yeah, so how does this not reach that?
I think this one is high.
Well, so you think it's possible in November of 2020 that voters say, one of the top issues for what I'm going to vote for president, if it's Donald Trump and Elizabeth Warren or whoever it is, Russia is going to be one of the top issues.
I think
that's possible?
I think it may be. And I do think, since the Mueller investigation is all about Russia, this does nothing but support Mueller. As you know, the Freedom Caucus this week has announced that they want to impeach Rosenstein.
Yes.
For what he's doing. This has to take some wind out of their sails. I'll tell you right now, because
they don't have the votes to do that. That's just political.
Well, no,
rhetoric.
I know that, Mike.
I mean, that's just an idle threat.
But yeah. I know that. But it's ridiculous. I mean, it is. Those people are saying, okay, we have to support this president no matter what happens, and we have to help him out here. But now they got to, as Mrs. Wick said, keep shut. And I think that
I know who she is.
I know she's my math teacher.
I agree that the Republicans are walking this tightrope where they're trying to call out Trump on this single instance. But otherwise, I'm basically with them because they know that 90% of the registered Republicans are with Trump. I watched Chuck Schumer. He was tough yesterday, but he didn't call for his impeachment.
Oh, boy, he didn't.
Pelosi didn't call for his impeachment.
That might be making a mistake. It needs to come from the House. Well, Nancy's in the House, but she's the minority leader. I think it's actually fortuitous for those who oppose Trump and would like to see him impeached, for the Freedom Caucus to come out and try to impeach Rob Rosenstein, because it will then, I mean, if that ever got to a vote in the House of Representatives, the mainstream Republicans would have to say, I'm sorry, buddy, we're not with you on this one. And it might just be the beginning of the breaking of that symbiotic relationship that has existed.
So I've been thinking this morning, what does Trump now do to get out from under this? He doesn't apologize.
You can't walk it back. You blame Hillary Clinton.
That's what you do. It's very effective.
That's a tough one to clean up.
Go to page 333, Galen.
It's pathetic.
So now that you brought that up, Ms. Clinton also said in her book, thank you for asking.
You're welcome.
The Kremlin's top strategic goal is to weaken the Atlantic Alliance and reduce America's influence in Europe, leaving the continent ripe for Russian domination. Thank you, Hillary, for writing that. And what are we all doing about it?
And what are we doing about it, especially when it comes to the election that's going to happen in this country in just a few months? I mean, we're not even, we have a president who has just dismissed all of this, even with Dan Coats saying we're being vigilant in this. But if nobody's taking him seriously, then what do you do?
But Joe, I didn't quite finish what I was suggesting. How does he get out from under this? And what I think he does now is, if I know Trump's playbook, in order to get out from this one, he does something that's even more outrageous right now.
Got to light a crazier hand grenade somewhere else.
He does, because it's the only way to suck the air out of the room and to do something. Let's just see if I'm right, but I think I am. Yeah.
I think we're going to have a war with some small country someplace obscure in the world.
Yeah, but this administration could just be, you know, his wife wearing a jacket. I mean, you know what I mean? It doesn't take much for it to change the cycle. I just don't know why. I mean, there was a lot of there were a lot of voices that came out yesterday over the last 24 hours speaking out against this. You know, will that continue? I don't know.
I think today is an important day. Are people going to let the Republicans, like John Faso, who says he disagrees with the president's approach, but generally he believes that the Russians did meddle with the election? I mean, that sums up an awful lot of people. I mean, he's in this region, but I think all across the country, a lot of Republicans took that line. Today will be the day where they'll sort of put their finger into the wind, and they'll have to decide whether they're going to stay there or whether they're going to actually criticize the president and condemn what happened in Helsinki, or whether they're just going to shut up and hope that it goes away.
And we're going to go to a break, but that to me is a key point. Where, okay, well, baby steps. We don't have to start talking about impeachment today, but you should at least be condemning what happened yesterday, at very least. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll go. We have a ton of letters. We'll go to those. We welcome yours still. panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Hey, guess what we're talking about? We have a lot of letters.
We got a lot of letters. Here we go. Philip says, dear panel, Ronald Reagan is rolling in his grave. No doubt Trump just gave aid and comfort to the enemy. This is an absolute disgrace, and I call for impeachment processing to start immediately. I was wondering where we go next. You know, it's that slim Republican majority in the House of Representatives, and you don't see anybody saying the word impeach. I get it. I certainly subscribe to it. I think he deserves it. But let's be real. Kevin says 25th Amendment. I just read the 25th Amendment, and so should everybody else, by the way. And aside from the obvious political bent of our Congress and cabinet, shouldn't the national attention be on those aides and abettors of an obviously debilitated president? Martha says, Trump and Putin. I don't want to sound too much like a conspiracy theorist, but it does now seem to me that Putin may have something on Trump.
Really?
And Putin may now indeed be pulling Trump's strings. If so, could Trump's performance at the G7, where Trump suggested Russia should be readmitted, the UK and NATO have been orchestrated run-up to Helsinki? Kathy says, what have they got on him? Alan asks, what have they got on him? Yeah, that's so true. Please start using the word blackmail, because that's what we are talking about. Our president is being blackmailed by a foreign agent, perhaps the most notorious and nefarious foreign agent of our time. And that is from Kathy. And Christine says, Trump and Russia. Good morning, panel. What is Pence's stance? Is on the Putin and Trump connection and treason? Question mark.
Well, he was out yesterday, moments after the speaking, I believe, in Washington, with a speech applauding the president for standing up to Vladimir Putin and putting America's values first. So that was what Mike Pence was doing yesterday.
I think it was Theresa May was standing up for American Western values and in the face of Putin.
Well, if you're Pence right now, it's so easy to see. You know, the chances of Trump maybe not surviving this first first term in office, you just don't want to misplay it. If you're him, I'm not subscribing.
I mean, how do you misplay it?
You misplay it by in any way seeming to be disloyal to this president. Because remember that it is the Republican establishment which is going to either put him there or try to do something else.
He said yesterday that Donald Trump's trip to Europe stands without that Trump stands without apology as the leader of the free world as a result of his summit.
Mm-hmm. And let's remember what the Russians were saying. They were saying this is a wonderful thing, and they really loved everything that happened there. Trump and Russia, says Christine. Okay, we did that. My fear is the Republicans know Trump is not going to make it through 2020. They're forcing the hand of Trump to resign, to be removed so that Pence can step in. Is just as horrifying, and that's from Christine. And Roger says 45's behavior. What is particularly curious to me is why 45 didn't even pretend to be a strong president at the news conference. One would think that he and Putin would be trying to keep up the pretense of 45's independence. Any idea why they would abandon that pretense now? Well, it's an interesting question.
It is an interesting question.
You know, I think to Putin, it's very important for his own domestic consumption to be seen as having brought the president to his knees. That's what I think. And that's why if you say, why would Putin not go along with keeping the president stronger, because for the same reason all along. It really wasn't that he loved this president more than he loved Hillary. It was that he wanted to be seen as somebody who could cause chaos, and he's doing that.
He wanted to defeat Hillary. Putin absolutely hates Hillary.
That. He said that yesterday.
Yes.
Well, he said it, but can you believe a word the guy says? I mean, I think his thing is to throw hand grenades in the middle of everything. That's what he's doing.
Chaos.
Yeah. Chris says, dear panel, in the light of recent events, what happened to the seven GOP lawmakers who visited Russia on July 4th? Their, quote, line was that they were there to, quote, challenge Moscow and meddling in the 2016 election. If so, where do they stand now on the indictment of 12 Russian hackers? Putin's denial? Preparations for a 2018 midterms? If not, then why were they there, really? Chris from Troy. Professor Chris from Troy. Vanessa says, dear panel, what does Trump's base make of his treasonous behavior? Do they like him kowtowing to Putin? We don't know that yet, folks.
But we to mention, Alan, don't you think, is the midterm elections and the fact that people have an opportunity to change the power in Congress now, and they need to move on that.
Yeah. Okay, let's ask JP that question. How much of a memory, based on your being around politics for a long time? So we now have November election.
Ordinarily, it's in November.
Thanks, Mike. I needed that. the November election's coming up. We will have to see whether or not, a lot of those Republicans, 90% of them standing with this guy no matter what he does,
Yeah, I think Trump's base, a big part of his appeal to his base is his strength. I don't think he looked strong yesterday. I think he looked weak. And I think that in November, if you look at history, you see a wildly unpopular president, they lose elections during their midterms.
But this is a very unusual president.
Right, no, but you can't look at, though, the macro dynamics of you're an unpopular president, your party's going to lose seats in Congress. Whether they lose enough to tip the balance of power, who knows, but I think they're certainly going to lose seats in November. There's no question about it.
Well, when you say that, would you look up to the sky and say it? As in, from your lips to God's ears.
Yeah, no. Yeah. The Republicans will lose seats in Congress in November. No question about it.
Geraldine says, no question about anything. But are you sure? Are you sure, JP, that everybody thought there was no question that Hillary would win the presidential election? I mean, this business about no question about it, I think we have to be very careful.
Well, I mean, I think it's but it's a safe bet, isn't it? I'm sorry, I'm trying to get the. Apologize. But it's a safe bet, I think, to your point. I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but somebody's going to lose their seat, right? I mean, whether it turns the House or not is to be seen.
Well, it is the Democratic base are really excited. They weren't really excited for Hillary Clinton, I'm sorry. They are really excited now because they hate Trump. So they're excited, and the Republicans, they have their president in. They're not going to be as excited. That's natural. You've seen this over how many years? You could tell me. You're the doctor. How many this happens over hundreds of years. It's going to happen.
Well, as I say, look upward. Geraldine says Trump's outrageous behavior on the world stage requires him to resign in big block letters. He is clearly a puppet of Putin, defying the advice of his own advisors to support a known foreign enemy who is, by Putin's own admission, has tried to undermine U.S. democracy. When is the Congress going to demand Trump's resignation? And that's from Geraldine in Niverville. And James says, good morning, panel. Should Putin launch his nukes at us? Why do I have zero confidence the orange American would even retaliate? Frightening. Jim in Binghamton. I'd love to hear from Binghamton. Trump in Russia, says Larry. We folks on the left are eager for any opportunity to remove Donald Trump from the White House. But since when is the CIA our friend? If Bernie Sanders had managed to win the presidency and then expressed distrust of CIA intelligence, would we be calling him treasonous? I'm not at all defending Putin here, but nearly all of his enumerated crimes in truth have their equivalents on the American side. And I'd rather see both criminal states at peace with each other than at odds. It goes on and on. And
well, it sounds like Rand Paul. Rand Paul came out yesterday.
He was the only one. He was the only one.
Gave a full endorsement of what Trump did with Putin and says only his detractors want to use it to hurt Trump, but it was perfectly okay with him.
It was the first time I had any sympathy for the guy who lived next door to Rand Paul. Okay.
Nicely put.
Putin taking Trump's pants off one leg at a time. Hi, panel. So does this galvanize Republicans to look deeper into the appointment of B. Kavanaugh? We might not be able to strike the Trump era from our memories, but maybe, just maybe, we can right his wrongs quicker than the previous Republican presidents. KT from Pittsfield and Reed says, good morning. It is far past time for the staff in the cabinet to actually act like patriots for once and invoke the 25th Amendment. If they can't find the stones to do so, history will find them complicit in this travesty. I've been on this case for a long time about what the historians are writing down in their notebooks right now, because believe me, it's not going to be pretty. Joe says, Joe McCarthy was right. Senator Joseph McCarthy must be rolling over his grave.
Yeah.
His paranoia was just a little premature. We may now have a Soviet plant in the White House. For all of those of you who may not remember Joe McCarthy, he thought there was a communist everywhere, and kept saying so. And Tom says, enablers. Why isn't Congress, the American people, more outraged with Trump's words at the summit? I used to think it was Congress that kept him, until I heard some Europeans wonder why the American people aren't protesting much. Fran says, midterm elections. What I found most interesting regarding the Putin affair is the erosion of a good deal of Trump support in the right-wing press. Is this a harbinger of possible erosion of his grassroots Republican approval? How might this impact the midterm elections? This sounds like an Allen question. Well, I don't know. It seems to me that the Republican who are running for Congress and the Senate right now are in deep, deep intellectual trouble themselves. They can't figure out what to do because on the one hand, you got the Trump support, and on the other hand, if they go too far, you know, they're regarded as being bad news. Yeah.
Just the first part of that, we have to take a break, but just the first part of that note, watching Fox yesterday, which I watched a lot of Fox yesterday, they were very critical. It was interesting to see. It was.
He said it wasn't his best moment.
Yeah, but I mean, the word disgraceful was used. I mean, we'll take what we can get, right? Let's take a break and we'll be back. Our friend Ray Graff is in the studio adjacent to ours. He is ready to read us the news. He looks about as happy as you can possibly be, and we'll go to him right now.
Friend?
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Kaylin Brown, and J.P. Miller, all part of the panel. I'm Joe Donahue. We have a ton of letters, so we're going to get to those and go through as we try to make sense of what happened.
Linda says, as I watch this all unfold, I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility of a military coup if he orders something really insane. Please tell me I'm being ridiculous. Now, that's a very interesting letter because I didn't know exactly after reading it twice how to take it. In other words, would the military coup be to support Trump or because Trump ordered something so terrible that the army, which is part of the intelligence and otherwise infrastructure of the country, would they pull a coup to stop him?
A good point. I don't know how it was meant. I will say, and you just have to wonder if you are a career intelligence person who has worked a good share of your life for this country and you're going to work today, how do you feel?
Well, what do you do to react? Is it better? See, some people ask why some of the people in the Trump administration who have some integrity left don't turn around and walk out.
Well, they were asking that all day yesterday about Dan Coats. Why doesn't Dan Coats just put his letter on the table, on the desk? And I'm like, well, good Lord, don't. He's the one guy who stood up.
I'm with you, Joe.
Good for
goodness
him.
Sakes. That's what I think.
Right?
Right.
Make him fire him.
I can understand why some would say it's my obligation to the country to try to keep things together. If I walk out, it's going to even be worse.
Right.
And yet duty sometimes requires people to take, you know, profound steps, and maybe some of them need to stand. And I mean, you know, you always hear stories about how in the scenes behind the, behind the scenes at the White House where people threatened to quit. Like last year when Trump was going to fire Mueller, they talked him out of it. Some people threatened to quit. You know, you don't know what's going on right now, but I think we're going to hear about what's going on right now. And I'll bet it's going to be a lot of that, you know.
A lot of people have taken notes for books. Okay, David says, can you imagine if Obama had behaved the way Trump did yesterday? Thanks, David.
I cannot remotely imagine that. It would never have happened.
I had Michael Eric Dyson in an interview this morning that will air later, and he said he had a great line. He said, let's put it this way. If President Obama had a black Russian in the White House after dinner, they would have wanted to impeach him.
Hmm. Okay, Richard.
It's hard to argue.
Sorry. Richard said, panel, if it ain't broke, why fix it? Panel, the Russian intelligence agency have used their significant computer hacking skills to corrupt our electoral system so they'll be able to choose our leaders. Why should Trump and the GOP want to fix that when they are the big-time beneficiaries of what the Republicans are doing? Is it any surprise that nothing has been done to fix that? Good point. Sharon says, mafia. So there's a theory that Trump owes a huge amount of money to the Russian mafia, and they say, do whatever our boss Putin wants or we'll kill you. And then he somehow bluffed his way into the presidency via the power of misogyny and racism and bam, and here we are. Thoughts on that theory?
Well, the misogyny theory is certainly valid because Putin hated Clinton, and one of the primary reasons he hated her is because she was a her.
Oh, interesting. Layla says, Trump and the GOP, it's not enough to be outraged. It's time for action. Focusing on Trump only feeds the sensationalist media frenzy. The GOP should be held accountable for Trump's actions. They're responsible for keeping him in office and therefore abetting his treasonous behavior. Well, I think there are going to be an awful lot of people running for the House and the Senate who are going to be saying exactly that again and again. Dan says, Trump and Russia. Listening to the right-wing radio talking heads, they are framing Trump's performance as bad form and missed opportunities, but nothing worse. I even heard jet lag as an excuse. I think, oh, that's funny. I think this is where the feckless Republicans will go rather than anything of substance. And that's from Dan. And I must say, as a column writer who has to write a couple of columns every week, I am in love with the word feckless. I use it a lot.
That man has no fecks.
And Catherine says, citizen without action. Good morning, lively panel. What can we do to apply pressure to the House and Senate Republicans who have said they do not support the president's Helsinki comments? How can we force action for treason and impeachment? I remember watching the debate and yelling at Trump as a traitor. Capital T. Well, right then. Thanks for bringing Hillary's comments to our attention from Kathy. That's a big something on page what? Page what?
Wait, I don't have my specs on. I can't see. 335.
335.
But there's a whole chapter.
Can I just? Well, go ahead, Alan.
No, please.
Go ahead. Okay. We'll get to
Elizabeth, those. Russia and the Republican Congress. Is it possible that the arrest of Maria Butina will give us some insight into the attachment of the Republican Congress to the Russians? There may be more there than fear of their voters. And that's from Elizabeth.
So this was the arrest yesterday of the Russian agent who sought back-channel meeting for Trump and Putin, was charged yesterday as a Russian agent, and accused of working with Americans to carry out a secret Russian effort to influence American politics.
Now, was that a Mueller indictment?
Court documents, FBI, I do not... The charges were filed under seal on Saturday, the day after 12 Russian intelligence officers were indicted. Mm-hmm. She's 29 years old. I do not believe...
It came from the Justice Department, I believe?
Yes. Yes.
Is that the Trump administration Justice Department?
It is.
Putin interview on Fox. Did you see the interview of Putin by Chris Wallace on Fox? It was fascinating and disturbing. Chris Wallace asked great questions, which Putin deflected with smirks and denials. Putin was clearly feeling confident and smug after his meeting with Trump and the press conference. He got what he wanted from Trump and is playing him like a fiddle. Putin also looks fit and vigorous, while DT looks tired and unhealthy, which makes us look weak. Can you imagine what the Repubs would have said if Obama appeared like that on the world stage? And James says, Republicans and impeachment, when the Republicans actually want Trump out, he's been a real problem and a pain in their side this whole time. Then they would get a Pence, a better politician, more in line with their conservative views, and would not be such a public eyesore. That's from James.
Do you think that the Democratic challengers to the Republican House members will start running on, if elected, I will vote to impeach the president?
Well, let me put it this way. For some reason, it seems like an anathema to them to do that. We're not hearing much of that. Personally, I think it is exactly the right way for the Democrats to go. I don't think there's any reason to think that people will think at this stage of the game, after what happened yesterday, that this is too wild out.
I disagree. With the political scientist in the room. I think it would be distracting and to make a one-issue campaign. I think the Democrats' problem is that all they are is against Trump. They come across that's only the only thing they are. They really need to come up with vision and ideas, and when they're asked the question, would you vote to impeach Trump? Well, if it comes up in the House of Representatives, I'll look at all the evidence and I'll make my decision based on the evidence. I mean, that's the perfect answer. You know, I don't think that they should commit themselves right now. I think it would be potentially backfiring.
I believe that's a feckless approach.
Yes, well, perhaps.
You see what I mean about that? Okay, Michael says, USA not the most prosperous nation in the world. While I agree with many of your comments on the panel, I feel people are not outraged by such things as Trump's performance with Putin. When I hear people on the left say the U.S. is the most prosperous nation in the world, which a panel member said this morning.
By some measures, I added.
It is no wonder a large number of people who struggle financially turn to Trump. Please don't say these inaccurate statements.
But with all those people who struggle financially, that's where the Democrats, I think, could make inroads. I think that they need to have a platform that speaks to the voters who are on the precipice and would turn in a direction that's more in tune with what this country stands for than in tune with dragging it down.
And Caitlin, don't you think also that it isn't only what they say, but how they say it? Don't you also think that there's a lack of passion in the Democratic Party? Passion.
I don't agree with that. I think there is passion. I think there's passion to help people. I do. I believe that Democrats want to help people to have productive and prosperous lives. I think many politicians hope that, but they have different ways of wanting to achieve it.
Well, that's your opinion. It's not mine. I believe it's a matter of passion. I think the Democrats need to develop a leadership cadre who really know how to get out there and sell the potatoes, and they're not doing it, and I can't think of anyone right now who's doing it.
Well, that was why Michael Corleone in Godfather II decided that he couldn't
always comes back to
he
that.
Couldn't make it work in Cuba. Make the mob couldn't move into Cuba because he saw the revolutionaries and how much passion they had, and he knew it was going to be toxic, and he got out of there before Castro took over.
Right, you are. I can't fight with you about that. Tristan says,
finally something he agrees with me on.
Tristan says, Trump's server comment. Trump brings up the server because there's a theory pushed by the Hannity believers that the DNC hacked, orchestrated the hack on themselves to blame Russia and gain sympathy votes. Love the show. I'm appreciative of all of you very much. Kelly says, leader of the free world. The media needs to stop referring to Donald Trump as the leader of the free world. He is certainly not.
He's absconded that role.
That's from Kelly. And Chuck says, good morning, panel. It seems to me that while I'm a lifelong Democrat and avowed liberal progressive, the Democratic Party is nowhere. Shouldn't all of our elected officials, Democrats and Republicans, be loudly and publicly screaming their outrage at the traitor in chief? Getting reelected is more important than our country. Embarrassing. Rock on. And that's Chuck from Saratoga Springs. And Leva says, comment, as a counterargument to be those being made and regardless of Trump's behavior overall, why is it so bad for him to meet with Putin? How is Russia an enemy of the U.S.? We seem to be going back to the 1950s. Is it not in the interest of all to reduce the risk of a nuclear World War III by the two countries communicating?
How are Russians the enemy of the U.S. by manipulating our elections? That's not an answer.
Or the long list, which has been repeated again and again and again this morning, about all the things that Putin has done, including killing people on the streets or trying to kill people on the streets of London.
Well, but to this country, of what they have done to this country alone, and not to be put, well, I guess they were sort of put into the president's foe list, but very low down after
after all our European allies,
right after the EU and NATO.
Okay, and then the big news is, of course, Trump's meeting with Putin, says Steve. But don't miss the important new development in the Russian election meddling, Maria Butina, and we talked about her.
Good.
Her and her relationship with the NRA. Norman, sure.
I just want to real quick, because we're running out of time, but I want to talk real quick about some of the media reaction yesterday, because I know this will be media project fodder, but I do think it's interesting to talk about it. At the end of the press conference, this has been talked about a lot. Anderson Cooper on CNN said, this is the first word you heard at the end of the press conference. You have been watching one of the most disgraceful performances by an American president at a summit in front of a Russian leader that I've ever seen. And it was obviously pointed in a remark, but and something that happened throughout the day yesterday, but there is an article in the New York Times today that's headlined New York excuse me, TV anchor is aghast after the Trump-Putin performance. I'm just interested from the journalists in the room of what you make of such comments of are you when you say something like that, are you basically bringing to mind what probably everyone at home maybe is thinking, or is that not your place?
I think that that was a fair analysis on the part of Anderson Cooper. I think he was analyzing what he saw. It came out as a criticism, but it deserved to be criticized. I think he still maintained his journalistic integrity when he said that. I think it was an extraordinary event that required him to take extraordinary steps in his journalism.
So it's not his opinion. That was just, he was stating the facts.
To me, it was a fact that that was disgraceful.
Yeah, characterizing and using the word disgraceful, I think it was problematic for me. I think that he could say that this will likely be called disgraceful. He could say that it would not be unreasonable for many to interpret this as an act of weakness on the part of the U.S. president, and it will likely do this. I mean, when you're the anchor reporting live, it's really problematic when you inject so directly your opinion. Now, if he was interviewed afterwards and said that, you know, to an interviewer about that event, you know, he might have a little more license. But I worry that even if you, Kaylin, and others saw it as just strictly reporting the facts, that this was a disgraceful performance by a U.S. president, I think an awful lot of people, probably more people, saw it as him just expressing his own opinion and kind of compromising his objectivity from that point forward in that report.
I'd like to make two very fast comments. I know we're out of time. The first of them is this was what I would only call a Walter Cronkite moment. Every once in a while, Cronkite would say something about Vietnam or something, and it would what?
No, he would take off his glasses.
Mike just did the perfect impression on the radio, but he did a great impression.
Right, and he would take off his glasses and look at the camera, and then you'd know that he's doing what you're talking about.
And while I'm with Galen about this, about why what he said and the appropriateness of it, I can only say that they are in a fierce competition with MSNBC. Who can be the most critical of this particular president, and I think that may have had something to do with it.
Well, I mean, also, though, while watching it, I thought to myself, because I was questioning myself as to whether it was as bad as I thought, and then when the first word you hear Anderson Cooper say that, going, oh, okay, all right, I'm not crazy. Like, this is really bad. But with that said, I also cringed. I thought, oh, really?
If I were watching MSNBC and Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski were there and saying that, it would just roll right off me because I expect them to say it.
They're
inject
not the
their
anchors.
Opinion to everything. Well, they're anchoring the show, but they already are they've crossed over so far.
But that's why it's a Walter Cronkite moment.
I watched Lester Holt last night. I thought he did a great job. He introduced the questions. He then showed Trump's answers. They then had analysis. And I think that Fox News, MSNBC, and CNN have turned into news entertainment. It's not, you're not watching news. You're there to feed your bias, whether it's on the left or on the right. You're there. Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, it's all entertainment. It's not news.
Well, I don't think it's all entertainment. I'll be honest with you, JP. I think they deliver a lot of information. You may not like the slant on
filter.
It and the rest of it. Filter, but they give you a lot of information. Did you? You couldn't walk around the streets of anything without somebody saying, did you hear what he said? And he said it because they kept playing his own words.
And of value is this story that I think the Times had it, about how different anchors did respond. So they actually analyzed the responses in this story, which was valuable. They stepped back and said, let's see how people responded. And they considered the question we're talking about now, which is valuable that they took a step back to look at it.
We are out of time. My thanks to everybody who weighed in and joined us this morning. We will, of course, be talking about this and many other subjects tomorrow and on the panel. We welcome your input. Panel at WAMC.org. Panelists, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
We'll
be back after this.